Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385. 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Reformation Club. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Well, if you didn't know what WikiLeaks was 6 months ago, you certainly know it now. It's almost a daily headline, leaking out primarily for the last month or two, leaking out from its hacked internet material, apparently an endless stream of revelations about Hillary Clinton's campaign, her email, her activity with the Clinton Foundation. There are many who would like to see Hillary Clinton not go into the White House in January who are saying, hey, it's about time. It's about time that WikiLeaks started doing the Lord's work, as they might say. There's no problem with this, bringing down all the right people, exposing all the right corruption. Is there a moral conundrum when it comes to WikiLeaks and other activities like it? It's our series Worldview Watch with Pastor Jonathan Fisk on this Tuesday afternoon, October the 25th. We're going to talk about the moral conundrum of WikiLeaks. He is pastor of St. John's Lutheran Church in Oaks, North Dakota, creative director of Worldview Everlasting TV, author of the book Broken, Seven Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break as Often as Possible. Jonathan, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Good to be back. Thank you.
How do you respond to someone who says, look, Julian Assange and his allies there at WikiLeaks, they're just doing all the right things, doing the Lord's work and bringing down all the right people right when we need them to? How would you respond?
Well, personally, I would say I'm kind of glad that it's happening, and yet at the same time, it's a scary thing that we shouldn't take lightly, that you have a group of anonymous vigilantes, there we go, who are hacking their way into what amount to private possessions, private information of American citizens, taking that information, copying it, and making it public. And this amounts to theft, effectively. Copyright law in our day and age is an interesting, debatable topic with fair use and all that, but if you've got something on your own private email account, most people would believe that they have a right under U.S. law to have that be private, that nobody, the government or otherwise, has a right to go and take it and share it with others, and that you could prosecute and result to that. So you have, some people would maybe see this as a bit of a Robin Hood kind of thing, and that's his own moral quandary. Well, Robin Hood, he was fighting against somebody who was in power who was bad, but he was also doing it by breaking the law. And whenever a Christian runs into this, it's not like we can just say, well, it's okay, right? No matter how you might politically feel about being glad that somebody is digging into the wrongdoings of those in power over us, we can't be glad and triumph in lawbreaking. In one sense, then, what you have is a lawless society relishing its lawlessness. It's like things are so bad that the only good is when the bad goes after the bad itself. But that's never something to rejoice in, and it's certainly something to take pause at, to worry about. If they can do this to Hillary Clinton, they can do this to you. They can do this to you with your bank account files. They can do this to you with your credit files. Who knows what is possible in this kind of wild west of computing? And again, vigilante answers to crime historically aren't really good things. They don't always help out. I mean, again, I mentioned Batman earlier, and I love the story of Batman, but he was a vigilante. He was taking the law into his own hands, and in that sense, he was a lawbreaker. He was a thief.
Okay, so how would you, as simply as possible, describe the moral conundrum here? What two things, I think you've said it in a long form there, but what two things are in conflict here for someone who wants to see the right thing done?
Right. We have the potential of a candidate for president, maybe it's beyond potential at this point, who is in gross violation of law at the federal level. And I think most people would agree that the people we want in government should not be violating federal levels of law. So that's Hillary Clinton. And yet, there seems to be not a lot of interest in the media to pursue this by the normal journalistic means of trying to find out what's going on. And then you have this other group, Julian Assange and WikiLeaks, and potentially the Russian government, that's at least one thing that's thrown around, who are going after this information to expose it to the world. And so on the one hand, you have somebody who is in office and potentially in a higher office breaking the law at a very high level that nobody should want. On the other hand, you have hackers stealing private information that nobody should want. So as a Christian, again, it's very hard to just land on one side of this and say, yay, go team, right? If you're still able to vote for Clinton in good conscience as a Christian, it's not like you can say there's no reason to try to figure out what was in those 33,000 deleted emails or those acid-destroyed servers that her workers destroyed before it could be given to the FBI. At the same time, if you are vehemently against Clinton, never Clinton, right? And you're on the hashtag bandwagon with never Clinton. You still can't be, as a Christian, just totally excited about a world in which theft of private information is glorified, and which someone is held up as a hero because of their ability to steal, right? So it's a moral quandary. There's no right or wrong in this situation because it's all so wrong, which I guess is sort of one of the problems many American people that I talk to are having with the elections in general. And this brings me back to that long-winded answer earlier about we just live in a lawlessness land at this point. There is nobody keeping the law. There is no real enforcement of the law. And so then again, as a Christian, who do you root for? You pray for everybody, I suppose. But, you know, what can you do when you do believe that at the highest level, at the two individuals even running for office in our land are lawbreakers, and they're the ones who are going to execute the law in this country. What do you do when your only hope is a potential black market, enemy of the U.S., Russian-backed secret organization that's exposing them? I mean, are they exposing them for the good of the American people? It's very unlikely. But then you have on the other side the media saying, don't look at it. Ignore all of this. It was stolen information. Is that for the good of the American people? You're just in a place where you can't win morally, and you're sitting here watching it as an American Christian and saying, how do I feel? And the only thing to feel is, dear heavens, help us, right? Lord, have mercy. You certainly want the truth out, but you don't want to glorify, again, theft or to rely on that as a means for getting your information or for founding a new form or a new direction for the government.
Tim Amundsen wrote for The Federalist recently, and I'm being fair in summarizing his piece. He's talking about WikiLeaks, and he basically says, look, if the media, the news media, were doing their jobs now, we wouldn't need WikiLeaks. And since they're not, we do. And so go for it, Julian Assange. And as he says near the end of his piece, we'll deal with you later. Is that an acceptable way for a Christian to think about this?
Well, I don't know if it's acceptable. It's certainly how I end up feeling. Yeah, whether that's right or wrong, and I have to sit and repent of it in a sense. But at least by the end of the argument, he's saying that what WikiLeaks is doing is wrong and needs to be stopped. But we're not going to complain if they expose real corruption in the government in such a way that convinces the American people to deal with it or to complain loud enough that the media goes after it. I thought the most helpful thing in his article was his comparison to Watergate, and both looking at the way in which the mass media was at the forefront of exposing the corruption in the Nixon scandal. They didn't say nothing to see here move along, which is sort of what we've been getting with regards to Clinton. They went after it. And yet he also points out that the journalistic reporters at the forefront of that that investigation, they weren't exactly following the law at all times either. They were going after information that they maybe were getting by dishonest means. And so in one sense, he's saying, look, we're in the same boat we've been. And when you have corruption in power, it has to be exposed somehow. And again, my heart says, yes, expose the corruption. Yes, I don't want liars in the presidency. On the other hand, I don't know that I can say, as a Christian, that it's entirely right of me to feel that way. You know, it is right of a Christian to feel corruption is bad. It needs to be dealt with. But when we, again, find ourselves on the side of promoting theft, now we're in a place where we're breaking the seventh commandment, or we're cheering it on as we do so, and we can't really fully do that either. It is a darned if you do, darned if you don't kind of reality. And again, you have to land where we always land as Christians, which is none of us are actually justified in who we are. We need the mercy of the Lord and His forgiveness. We need the Lord of the church to work all this for the good of the church, and we need Him to also convince our government to follow its own rules. That's why we pray in the prayers of the church every week for the government, for those who lead and protect us, that they would be wise, that they would pursue justice and good counsel and impede wickedness rather than hide it or even do it for themselves. So, you know, I think the ultimate Christian answer has to be, but for the grace of God, there go I. Heaven help us by whatever means you can. Curb by your law the wickedness back into a justice that we can live under in peace, and forgive us when we are so distraught by the frustrations of this life that we find ourselves cheering for wickedness because it might just stop some other wickedness from happening.
It sounds as though what you're trying to steer away from consistently here, and you're being quite honest and kind of you're conflicted in between your, you know, rooting for Julian Assange when he is exposing a wrong, but it's wrong by the means he's doing it. What it sounds like you're steering away from consistently is that utilitarian ethic, which says the end justifies the means. Am I right?
Yeah, right. The pragmatic mindset, right? That if it works, it must be good. And this is a very American worldview basis, is sort of the way we do things. But that mindset has wreaked havoc on our society morally in the first place. It's wreaked havoc in the church. It has undermined many of the best traditions of the ancient church, and with it then some of our best beliefs. The cross of Jesus Christ is not a pragmatic answer to spirituality. It doesn't give you what you want right now. It gives you a suffering now and a very delayed gratification that rests entirely on some promises connected to things that don't look like they're miracles at all, like baptism and the supper. And so pragmatism, when it attacks things, can, or when it gets into the blood of things, it can really undermine truth. And that's the case then with morality. And so, you know, let's go back to Batman here for a second. And I don't know anybody, I don't know anybody who doesn't like Batman. Batman is hard not to cheer for because he makes the law happen in a lawless city. He goes beyond what is legal so that legality can be restored. And we want to cheer. Robin Hood is a good example of this too. We want to cheer for him because he's fighting for the common people. And yet, in real life, I mean, that's a story about a hero attempting to overcome wickedness. In real life, it still has to be said, he is breaking the law. Now, I think Batman does make an effort to kind of not actually break the law. He works with the police. Robin Hood, on the other hand, was really dastardly in quite a few ways, depending on which mythology you're looking at with him. I'm steering away from anything that would lead us by our present apparent need to end up detaching ourselves from the Ten Commandments of God in our mind, in our worldview, and to be able to still call a thing what it is, even if it's evil working for the moment, maybe for some good, it's still evil. You know, God does this in the Old Testament when he sends Assyria to destroy northern Israel to punish them for their abandonment of the covenant. And in the prophecies that are like right on top of that happening, he also says, and Assyria, by the way, you're not exactly my friend. Woe to you. I'm going to destroy you too. Just hold on. You know, and so God does use evil to destroy evil. He traps wickedness in itself. But that doesn't mean as Christians we can rejoice in that wickedness. It means we sit and we wait on the mercy of God and we pray that we don't detach ourselves from his righteousness and end up in that wickedness fully ourselves without anything to cover us, without the cross or the forgiveness of sins.
Pastor Jonathan Fisk is our guest. It's our series Worldview Watch. We're talking about the moral conundrum of WikiLeaks. When we come back, we talked there about the end justifying the means. It's not just an avoidance of God's law, which is something Christians should never attempt to do. It's also a problem when it comes to that word justifies. We'll talk about that after this.
A confessional liturgical Lutheran congregation in southeast Michigan in Rochester Hills. The Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word. That's LCIW.org. We gather for the divine service every Sunday, 9:30 a.m. at Lutheran High School Northwest. The Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word. Find us on the internet at LCIW.org.
Join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club in October, and we'll send you a limited edition Here I Stand t-shirt. Find out more about our monthly or annual giving program at issuesetc.org. Just click the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses, or call Craig 618-223-8385. Join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by Reformation Day, and we'll send you a limited edition long sleeve shirt along with your other membership benefits. The Issues Etc. Reformation Club.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Recently graduated from high school or college and looking for a chance to serve a community in need while sharing the good news of Jesus Christ? Lutheran Young Adult Corps may be for you. Lutheran Young Adult Corps provides opportunities for long-term, full-time service for 10 weeks through the summer or 10 months over the school year in places like St. Louis, Philadelphia, and Boston. Find out more about Lutheran Young Adult Corps by finding us online at lcms.org/YACORPS or on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Lutheran YA Corps.
Lutheranism in the public square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you have skills as a coder, designer, writer, marketer, project manager, or are interested in building websites? Do you want to help the church proclaim Christ and Him crucified to the digital world that we live in? If yes, you should join our WordSites team. WordSites is a group of tech-savvy volunteers who help fellow Lutheran organizations build effective websites. Plus, we have fun while we're doing it. To submit your name, or to learn more, visit WordSites.org. WordSites, your confessional Lutheran website, reformed.
When you say, "I am baptized," you are in fact saying, "Jesus died for me."
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Now that work of Christ for you is given to you in baptism.
Morning Chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's our series Worldview Watch. We're talking about the moral conundrum of WikiLeaks. Pastor Jonathan Fisk is our guest. pastor of St. John's Lutheran Church in Oaks, North Dakota, creative director of Worldview Everlasting TV, and author of the book Broken, Seven Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break As Often As Possible. You'll find a link to this book and to Worldview Everlasting TV under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Jonathan, we were talking before the break about how we need to steer clear of the end justifies the means, which is kind of our natural moral compass, as twisted as that is, because we can't deny that there's a right and a wrong. The wrong is usually something we define. The right is something we define. And we're really good at self-justifying in this case. And that's that, to me, that's why the end justifies the means can never be a viable Christian option, even when you see it exposing corruption like it has, because of that word justifies. That's an attempt, a blatant attempt at self-justification, isn't it?
Right. I mean, the phrase itself certainly it leads itself to that idea that it doesn't really matter what I do because I can justify myself by what I achieve with what I do. So it's inherent in the phrase self-justification. Justice is a good thing, and God designed it in the world. He meant justice to be here. And anger is a good response to injustice. Anger is a godly attribute. It's not that anger is evil, it's that injustice is evil, and anger is the proper response. The problem is that for us fallen humans, children of Adam, our anger meter, our justice meter is skewed. It's skewed toward ourselves, that anything that would hurt me, I consider injustice, and anything that would benefit me, I consider justice. So it's not that we're wrong to want justice or that we're wrong to be angry about injustice. The problem is when we try to make justice out of injustice with a skewed meter, right? We end up then diverting everything back into ourselves and getting to this place where you just said the end does justify the means in our minds because we're making it what we want it to be. We're making ourselves, as it were, happy, content, satisfied, when true righteousness, true justice is only satisfied by God's own creation of it. We can't make justice from ourselves. It actually has to be given to us, to be put into us, which is why the justification of the sinner in Jesus is such an important thing. This is why Jesus is the only way to heaven, is because he's the only human in any religion in the world to actually achieve a satisfaction of God's anger at the injustice of the world, and so unbend us back to straight, justifying all nations, right, by his blood on the cross. And we can't escape this desire to justify ourselves, and we do it every day, all day. This is Romans 7 at its peak, that we're just constantly curved inward on this justification quest. But what we can do, especially from the Scriptures, is through the renewing of our minds, the transformation of our heads according to the words of God, learn to call this thing the sin that it is, and at least in ourselves and in the world around us, try to guard our minds against it. It's not that we're going to stop doing it, but we can stop believing it's a good thing to do it. And this is where then, for the Christian, living in the pragmatic culture that we are in, we need to constantly be assessing what we believe is right according to the Ten Commandments of God, and our answer to that, according to the creed, according to who God is in his Son Jesus and what he's done for us. And with that, I don't expect us to ever stop being tempted by the need to self-justify, but at least we have a counter-answer, right? We have God's answer, which truly does justify us. It's amazing. You can say it this way. The death of Jesus has justified this election. The death of Jesus has justified the entire destruction of American morality. Not that it's made it okay, but that he's paid for it, right? And that's the worldview we want to thrive and live from as we engage the injustice we see all around us.
With about 30 seconds here, someone says, look, it's politics. Politics is just a warfare in disguise, and all this fair and love and war. What's your one-minute response?
The Christian ethic disagrees with that. It certainly, that is the way the world operates. There's no question about that. All is fair in war is the way the world operates, but Christianity is not the way the world operates. Christianity doesn't necessarily look out for itself. It's possible to make just war to protect your people, but you wouldn't do so by intentionally trying to be evil at its highest level. So while certainly we live in a world where you can't avoid that in war there's going to be atrocities happening, you don't rejoice over the matter or throw Christian virtue to the wind and say, oh, well, we live on a sinful planet, let us sin all the more that grace may increase. Instead, you keep repenting through and into the Ten Commandments and the Creed, through and into the Catechism. That's about the only answer I got. I mean, it is sort of the sin boldly of Luther's letter to a friend. You know, you can't get through this thing without finding yourself tainted by wickedness, but neither do you choose the wickedness. Rather, you crawl on your knees as a beggar the entire way, saying, Lord, help us, but always striving to turn yourself back into and toward that good from which we know we've fallen. And that is what the Ten Commandments preach to us, give us, and promise us a restoration to in the life of the world to come.
Pastor Jonathan Fisk is pastor of St. John's Lutheran Church in Oaks, North Dakota, creative director of Worldview Everlasting TV, and author of the book Broken, 7 Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break As Often As Possible. Jonathan, thanks for being our guest.
Absolutely. Appreciate it.
We're going to talk about the reported archaeological discovery of a breach in the ancient wall of Jerusalem that led to its destruction in 70 AD with Dr. Craig Evans after this. I'm talking with regular guest Dr. Ken Sherb about a new book by one of his former professors. Which one, Ken?
The late Dr. Kurt Marquardt, and the book is The Saving Truth, Doctrine for Lay People.
You edited this book.
Yeah, the unpublished manuscript was among Marquardt's papers, and it is vintage Marquardt, lively, engaging, centering in the Christ who saves, with an apologetics chapter at the end.
You can find out more about Saving Truth, Doctrine for Lay People at lutheracademy.com.
I'm not a Christian, but I listen to your show because actually you do have some interesting topics.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
You believe that there's not one error in the Bible. That's intellectually infantile. You also believe that Jesus is coming again. You promote extremely sexually repressive views.
The Issues Etc. comment line, available 24/7, 618-223-8382.
Have fun waiting for Jesus to return. Got news for you. He ain't coming back.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues, Etc. 300. Messiah Lutheran, Seattle, Washington. Grace Lutheran, McPherson, Kansas. St. Paul's Lutheran, Bridgeport, Nebraska. Our Savior Lutheran, Raleigh, North Carolina. St. Paul Lutheran, Hancock, Maryland. Messiah Lutheran, Keller, Texas. St. John's Lutheran, Maple Grove, Minnesota, Grace Lutheran, Parker, Colorado, and Our Redeemer Lutheran, Harrington, Kansas. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues, Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues, Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues, Etc. journal. Issuesetc.org. Click support. The Issues, Etc. 300.